Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Optimistic Future Podcast. My name is Brian Reid, and today I am joined by Julia Kramer. Julia is a member of the Leftovers Foundation, and the Leftovers Foundation, to my understanding, is their mission statement, which I have in front of me here, is quote unquote to reduce food waste and prevent the greenhouse gas emissions caused when good food is left to rot. Talking about food waste today. This is a topic that I've been interested in for about maybe 7 or 8 years now. I remember hearing sort of an expose, if you will, on all of the basically the issue of grocery store food waste, where I can't remember the numbers. That's why I want to talk to Julia to get some more information, get to up to speed on this. But just hearing like it was some horrendous number around like the, millions of tons of food that are wasted every year, just, things at the grocery store aren't purchased and they rot and they go in the compost or go in the garbage or what have you. And that just really struck me as being awful, because it takes so much energy and effort to grow food and produce food and transport food and for a significant amount of food to be going in the garbage, especially when there are folks in the world who do not have enough food or who are really, struggling to make ends meet. It just is really upsetting that there'd be so much food going in the garbage. So I want to learn more about this issue, and hopefully those of you listening to this episode want to learn more about it as well. So I'll be picking Julia's brain and hopefully getting some good insight into learning more about this issue. But then, of course, as as really the mandate or the goal of all of the episodes on the Overcoming Chronic Illness podcast, to find some tangible steps that we can all take, some easy steps and maybe some other steps that require a bit more elbow grease to see how we can contribute to the helping with the problem of food waste. Or maybe Julia will tell me that the problem's almost solved and we don't have to worry about it moving forward, but we'll see. Just before bringing Julia into the interview, I just wanted to invite you to visit our website. It's optimisticfuturepodcast.com. On the podcast, there's a compendium of past episodes. And then there's also a easy to reference list of simple things that simple steps that you can take to strive to help make the world a better place. Just simple steps that don't take a whole lot of effort or energy. And those steps are inspired by the advice or thoughts or feedback from guests on the episode on the podcast. And then there's also a list of more in-depth steps that one could take if they want to do more than just the simple steps on the website. So please do check out the website if you could. So again, optimisticfuturepodcast.com. And then also just a quick plug for the sort of sister project, if you will, of the Overcoming or sorry, I have another podcast called Overcoming Chronic Illness, of the Optimistic Future podcast, which is an initiative I started several years ago. It's a registered charity called Made Local. So the website for the Canadian version of that site is madelocalgroup.ca. And then there's a US-based version, madelocalgroup.com. And those are websites that feature companies that manufacture their goods in Canada and the USA, respectively. And to my understanding, there is a economic benefit to supporting local companies, these small businesses as a rule that are actually manufacturing goods in our respective countries, and also an environmental benefit because when goods don't have to be shipped across the world to get into our homes, et cetera, then that is something that helps to reduce just the environmental footprint and not using as many resources and whatnot to contribute to shipping and whatnot. So please do consider visiting the website. There is a mailing list for the website, so please consider joining that. My hope is that as we have more folks joining the mailing list for the Made Local Group charity, that'll be able to start approaching businesses and saying, hey, there's a significant number, there's a critical mass of folks who want products that are made in our, in our made locally, like made in our countries. Would you, consider selling more of those products? So going to places like, Walmart or different clothing stores and saying, hey, like if you carry things that are made locally, there's going to be a market for that. So the mailing list will keep you abreast of just different companies that we add to our website to that are manufacturing goods in Canada or the US respectively. And then also just hopefully doing some future philanthropic work that will allow for more business to be available for folks who do want to manufacture goods locally in Canada and the United States, and eventually maybe other countries will have other made local websites as well, potentially. So with all of that out of the way, I am going to pause the recording for just a quick second, and I'll be back in just a moment with Julia. All right, everyone. I am now joined by Julia Kramer of the Leftovers Foundation. So, Julia, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thank you, Brian, for having us.
My pleasure. So, would you mind telling listeners what the Leftovers Foundation is about? Maybe just a bit of your background, how you got involved, and what the foundation is all about, please.
So the Leftovers Foundation is a food rescue and redistribution organization. Brian, I'm sorry, my dog has the squeakiest toy. Let's stop and start over.
I can't actually hear any squeaking at all, so we're okay. It's
Okay,
adding
sorry.
this is adding flavor to the interview. This is good. We're real people, folks, having real life problems. So.
We at Leftovers we don't have a headquarters in most of our cities, so a lot of our staff work from home. So this really is a real taste of what we've got. So Leftovers Foundation started in Calgary in 2012. We are a food rescue and redistribution organization with a mission to save good food from ending up in the landfill and connect it to nonprofits and organizations who are helping people with food insecurity every single day. We have operations in Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Lethbridge, Red Deer, Hinton, Airdrie, and Selkirk. A little bit across Western Canada. We started in 2012 in kind of a really organic way. Our founder, Lourdes Juan, was at a bakery and saw what was happening at the end of the day, saw that there was food that was unsold, and therefore not going to make it to consumer. And long story short, she wanted to do something about that. Picked up that first load of bread and took it to an agency, and thus Leftovers was founded. So it really did grow from there. The app was created, which is our central place that volunteers interact with us. All of the logistics for pickup and drop off happen there. Expansion and the rest is history.
Amazing. And so at the end of the day, Julia, like I'd love to get into more of like what your group is doing, like with helping folks and redistributing that food and all of that. Maybe just to kind of talk first a bit more about the background of like, because of course getting food to folks who don't have enough food, that's important on so many levels. But maybe just taking a few steps back around, like, to what extent is food waste actually a problem in our, we'll say, we'll kind of limit it to Canada, North America. I don't know where you have stats based out of. Just for folks who are listening, as I know have a international audience. I think all the places you mentioned, the vast majority of them are in Alberta, or all of them are in Alberta. Is that correct? In
That's
the
right.
beautiful country of Canada, where we both reside. To what extent is food waste a problem? Maybe we could just start there. If you could speak to that a little bit, please.
So food waste is a problem. Not even talking about maybe the social aspect of it, right? That people deserve to eat, and we have people going without. Purely on a climate perspective, food waste is one of the largest contributors to climate change. When food rots in the landfill, it produces methane, which we know is incredibly harmful to our environment. So the emissions created, not even counting the transportation that goes into, moving food across the country, across borders internationally, the water that goes into the production of food, all of the person labor, maybe that's the harvesters or the farmers themselves or the manufacturing plant. All of this natural resource, to see it end up in the landfill and see the impact of it, in terms of the emissions created, it's massive. One of the things that we hear in this space is that if global food waste was like it was a country, it would be one of the top, emitters of one of the biggest impacts on our climate. If it was a country, it would be in the top. I think it's like the top three or top five, something like that. So any piece of action that we can do to, decline that, make that less, is impactful. So that climate aspect really is kind of the heart of one of our whys. But the duality of it really makes us a no-brainer, makes our solution just that.
Do you know if there are any like studies or information on like to what extent food waste actually inflates the cost of, say, groceries at the grocery store? I presume manufacturers would have to take that into account of like, oh, we're going to be throwing away X amount of food or X percentage of all the food. So obviously they don't want to lose money on the food they're throwing out. So do we have any, are there any stats or information on that?
I don't have a good number for you, but anecdotally, bread is one of the things that we see wasted the most, because it's the cheapest to make, kind of easy to do those things. And but we've become accustomed to seeing full shelves. We, the consumer, think there's a problem when we don't see full shelves. That issue in itself is kind of really telling, and if I had numbers, I'm sure they'd be staggering, as to what that looks like. But the desire to have every single product available in case somebody comes in wanting to purchase that is a capitalistic reason that some of this problem is occurring. The desire to be able to make a profit to the detriment, right, of that food going to waste.
And just in terms of the amount of food going to waste, like are there stats that have been that you're aware of, like around like how much food is thrown out by, you know, grocery stores or various institutions, like in Canada or the States or other parts of the world? Any numbers on that that you're aware of?
They like to keep their cards close to their chest, I'll say for sure. But I can speak to the Leftovers Foundation numbers. In 2023, Leftovers had a huge impact. And it was over £1 million of food redirected from ending up in landfill. And we're a small but mighty organization, across a couple cities, doing things in a volunteer kind of initiated way. So if you can imagine what our small communities are doing on a global scale, on a national scale, the numbers are massive.
Huge
Anecdotally,
multiplier.
I guess I can also say the research says about a third of all food produced in Canada that is wasted could feed everyone experiencing food insecurity.
Wow.
So
And sorry, that's food insecurity in Canada
in
or?
Canada, yeah,
Okay.
in
Yeah.
Canada.
Wow. Okay.
So we could do it. We really could do it. It's not a food issue. Food insecurity is not a food issue because the food is available in this country, a country of abundance. It's an income issue. It's that people aren't able to get it themselves.
One of the things I've also wondered about over time, and my wife and I kind of lament this a little bit from time to time. It's like, oh, there's a product that we bought and it's, you know, it's got a best before date. And it's like, what interesting language, you know, is it best before? Like who's determining best, you know? And if it's just best before, when is it just better before? And when is it no longer okay? You know, we can all tell when like the milk's gone off and you don't want to be drinking that based on the smell of it or whatnot. But I'm just wondering if there's anyone that's kind of looked into like I don't, could you speak to the whole best before and is adhering to best before like is it an arbitrary date that's put on things and is that maybe contributing to the problem of food waste?
Definitely contributing to the problem. It's so best before it does not mean expiry. There are very few things, medications, baby formula, anything that's kind of, you know, medicinal in that way. Best before dates, expiry dates should be treated as such in those cases. But for food products, you know, anything that's shelf stable, canned food, best before really means manufacturer guarantee. That is the date to which they will guarantee that, you know, the quality, the texture, the lack of separation of the product. That's their date to say, yep, we give it our stamp of approval. Doesn't mean it's not unsafe, or doesn't mean it's not safe to consume after. Canned food, for example, you know, we think of the bomb shelters, you know, people who are preparing for end of days. They've got canned food, they've got dried food. Methods of preservation with all of the technology that we have today. You know, it's not about safety, it's about the manufacturer. Yeah. One of our favorite things to educate on, your example of the milk, right? You pull that out of the fridge. It could have gone bad a week before the posted date, based mm-hmm. on how, you know, based on how you used it, if you kept it in and out of the fridge properly, or it could be good 2 weeks past that date, right? That sniff test is the best thing we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really trying to educate people about safety versus what the manufacturer wants to tell us.
Right. Yeah. So I guess on that note, and just where, you know, one of the goals of these interviews is to try to distill out, like, what are some simple steps that, you know, everyday folks can take to, you know, help with this? Because not everyone listening is going to have the, you know, the time or motivation or skill set to, you know, join your group or start up their own chapter wherever they're listening from. I'd like to think there are probably some tangible steps that we could all take that are kind of simple steps that we can all take to help reduce food waste. And so around the best before date side of things, like, is there any tangible advice that, you know, you could give, or that you would ask people to consider, like, around best before, like, that could help to reduce food waste? Would you mind speaking to that?
Yeah. First step is use what you have. Start at home. Start your grocery list at home, looking in the freezer, looking in the pantry, instead of, you know, purchasing new. Try and use your pantry, because chances are you've got some dates that you didn't rotate in there. And kind of keeping a finger on the pulse of what you've already purchased helps to not buy too much, or, you know, not buy more. Use your freezer. Your freezer is one of the best tools to keep food that is potentially going bad good. You know, fresh vegetables, many, most can be frozen and used in some other capacity. A dehydrator is another amazing tool that you can use to keep food that was fresh and going bad to keep much longer. And share with your community. You know, we were never meant to live in single family households. So maybe you don't have, you know, we talk about going over to your neighbor for a cup of sugar. Well, maybe you've got X ingredients and they've got Y ingredients, and you turn out something beautiful by sharing that way. You spoke to, you know, growing a garden at home, another amazing thing that you can do. And further to that is composting. Composting your organics is a great way to not be contributing to food ending up in the landfill.
I'd like to circle back to some of the advice there, but maybe just on that last note there, I mean, just feel like some folks might be listening, like, wait a minute, like, if I have a compost bin or a compost pile, or there's a landfill, like, aren't those all kind of the same thing? So is there some reduction in methane excretion or production, like, if it's sitting in a landfill versus in a compost bin without all the worms and other critters in there?
Definitely. Compost gives organics a new life, allows it to be regenerated, and used again. There's an adage that I've heard in this work as well, is that anything that we consume either turns into garbage or turns into food, you know? So you really have a choice there.
Okay. And then just kind of circling back to the, advice around putting things in the freezer, which, you know, say the fresh veggies, you know, that makes sense. Like, absolutely. We of course see at the grocery store aisle, you know, tons of frozen veggie options and whatnot. Same could go with, say, like berries, like strawberries and blueberries and things like that. Are there other things that I've never thought about it. So are there other like kind of non-fruit, non-veggie things, that you'd consider putting in the freezer as well? I guess bread could go in there as well. Other things that are kind of getting close to being off that would be maybe things that folks wouldn't intuitively think of to put in their freezer?
One of my favorite things to do in my household is batch cook and then freeze portions of the meal.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I know if I'm making it, you know, a big, big pot of chili, we're going to put it in the container and it's going to sit in the fridge. And, you know, maybe we get sick of chili or want something else in the rotation, or, you know, some other plan comes up and we end up maybe eating out of the home. Planning in advance to put a portion in the freezer, make sure that you don't forget about something at the back of your fridge. You talked about what we see in the grocery store as frozen. A quick Google search will tell you just about anything you want to know about your food. So if you don't know, the answer is at your fingertips. So I would encourage people to get curious, and just look into it. If you don't know, there's probably someone who does.
That is very true. I can't tell you how many things I fixed around my house just with YouTube videos of like, oh, like how do I fix my microwave? Oh, just go on YouTube and somebody's probably got a tutorial on there. So yeah,
totally.
Gotta love the internet. Some bad things with it, but lots of good.
Lots of good.
And I'm just wondering around the whole like best before date side of things. I'm just typing out like a little list here that I'll add to our website of, you know, in the simple steps section of the website of like simple things that you can incorporate into your life to help with, you know, around this issue around, you know, reducing food waste. So we've got a few great things on the list there just around the best before date. If you were to say, phrase that as kind of a bullet point, like what would you say around best before date for just a tangible step that a person could take to try to reduce food waste as they're considering their best before dates?
Best before dates do not mean expiry. A good rule of thumb is at least 6 months past, something's going to be just fine. Past that point, open it, smell it, take a look at it. But yeah, expiry does not equate to, or best before does not equate expiry, does not mean it's unsafe. Give it a go.
And I guess just the thing that springs to my mind, you're preaching to the converted here. I've absolutely done this in my household for many moons. My wife could tell you stories about like, oh my gosh, like just this guy never lets anything go in the garbage, never anything in the compost unless it's really off. Sounds great. I guess the one, maybe I'm just trying to think of like counter arguments that folks might have. It's like, like what about like botulism? You know, it's like, it's a canned good. You know, what about something like that? Like I know with when folks are self-canning and all that, they have to be careful with that. But is there any kind of like a safety factor or like tangible risk factor with something like that? Yeah. Or is that just totally just home canning and otherwise we don't have to worry about things like that?
If your can is dented, probably still okay, unless there's air able to get into the can. If it's bulging or if it's rusted, those are the indicators. So if it's bulging or rusted, get rid of it. If there's any evidence of, you know, the ability for air to get into it, get rid of it. But other than that, it's totally cool. That's actually one of the things that we rescue a lot is dented cans, because for that very reason, they're deemed unsellable, but still totally safe.
Mm-hmm. Great. And just one kind of random question here. So I've kind of had the thought of like, okay, so if I was If I'm running like a huge grocery store and, as you said, there's the sort of customer psychology aspect and, maybe not to pin all the blame on the grocery stores, they need to make some money and they, are taking into account our human psychology. And it's true. Like if I went to the grocery store, I was like, oh my gosh, like there's only 10% of the shelves are filled. Like what's going on here? Like, is there a famine? Is the store going under? So I can understand like where they want to take into account natural human psychological tendencies. So, it is what it is. But if I'm a big grocery store giant and it's like, okay, I'm going to be throwing out approximately 30% of all the food that I bring in, versus if I'm, say, a independent small farmer, I'm growing all the food myself. My margins are a heck of a lot slimmer than the grocery store giant. I'm probably going to be a lot more mindful about, not letting. I'm going to try to really minimize all that food going to waste. When I was interviewing one of my friends who runs a small farm, she was saying, yeah, if we have, veggies or fruit or whatever that's not, pretty enough to sell, then she feeds it to her pigs or chickens, whatever. Like, it none of it goes to waste on her farm because she has animals and plants. But I guess I'm just wondering it, overall, like I don't know if there's any formal stats or if you could speak to like if a person's thinking, okay, I want to reduce food waste, would there be some is would it be logical to think, oh, if I support like a smaller chain grocery store or a smaller, small farm, like buy my stuff at farmers markets, would there tend to be less food waste purchasing from like a smaller seller versus a larger seller?
That is a wonderful question. And it brings up the concept of circularity. A circular economy is one that has a closed loop. Anything that's kind of created ends up turning back into creation. You're so right that the larger corporations have less, they have less contact with the end point, right? Which ends up being the consumer. They also have the ability to, they just can do things on a different scale. So the thought process that goes into a small scale business or a small scale farm or, somebody who's selling at a farmer's market, their loop is much smaller. They often are making more personalized decisions. They know their staff names as well. That's something that is really special. But you're right that the kind of the ownership and the stewardship of what they're doing tends to be a little bit more considerate. And the practices can be, thought out in that way that you talked about, the what's unsellable maybe goes and feeds the pigs. That's a wonderful solution. There's the hierarchy of need, and we always want humans to be eating food that's fit for human consumption. But yeah, the ownership in terms of environmental practices and corporate social responsibility tends to be a little bit more a little bit more thoughtful because they just have to. They see the people that are being impacted, I think. But going to your farmer's market, you know that food has maybe traveled less distance, less hands have touched it. Maybe the growing practices are organic or regenerative or are doing something nicer to our environment. And you're keeping money in your community as well, right? It's there's something really powerful about money changing hands, and those are the hands that, grew the food or fostered the land. That is a really powerful thing that we can do in our own localized communities. Keeping our footprints smaller does help totally. But there are some large chains who are doing some amazing things. In Winnipeg, we've got Red River Co-op is one of our grocery stores. Co-ops are all across the country, but the Red River Co-ops, they're super committed. They have a donation out of every single one of their grocery stores every single day. And I guess even in the scope of things, they would be considered a smaller scale. But where there's a will, there's a way. It really comes from the desire to be doing good. And I think the smaller scale you get, the more good is being done there. Yeah.
Makes sense. And I guess just co-ops are, I'm glad you brought that up because I'd like to put a little mini list together anyways to say like, okay, maybe to help with the food waste mitigation, consider buying from smaller outfits. So, you know, farmers markets, I mean, pretty much any major city center and lots of not so major city centers, like farmers markets are everywhere, which is wonderful. And then so I'll add co-ops to the list because that might be something to consider as well. Any other kind of outfits besides co-ops and farmers markets, or of course you can buy directly from your farmer, like, you know,
Yes.
CSAs and things like that, but anything else besides those options that would spring to mind?
Yeah, that was going to be my next thing is doing a CSA, supporting a local farmer directly, is one of the most impactful things you can do. Our farmers are really truly the unsung heroes of our food system. You know, the no farmers, no food movement, really that is the truth. Without them, we will perish. We need that kind of that industry to continue and to be strengthened. It's the backbone of our local economies. And yeah, so if you can support a local farmer directly, it helps them, you know, be able to plant accordingly and plan their season, which often can be such a precarious thing, you know, with the changing climate. They're interacting with a lot of systems that they have no power over. So that's a really special thing that you can do.
Great. And I'm just thinking as well, like I know when I go to the grocery store, you know, if I'm picking out sweet potatoes or whatever, it'll be like, well, you know, that one doesn't look, you know, quite as beautiful as that one. But like, well, I could cut that away and maybe lose, you know, 2% of the sweet potato and it's going to be just fine. And, you know, of course, if something just looks really rotting and haggard, I'm not going to buy that one. But it's like, okay, like, yeah, I can maybe get, you know, three beautiful apples and one that's like, oh, yeah, there's a bruise on it. But like, well, if I don't buy that one, then it maybe it'll make it to like the, you know, super reduced shelf that doesn't all look very appealing. And it's just probably going to wind up in the garbage. So I guess I'm wondering if you could speak to I don't know, I guess something on the topic of like maybe we can at least sometimes like lower our standards a little bit and like is there a role to is there a role for you know, settling for products that are maybe not quite perfectly beautiful, and that could be helpful to reduce food waste if we are willing to like lower our standards a little bit here and there.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Ugly produce is one of the contributors to food waste, and the consumer expectation of perfect produce. I don't know that it's necessarily a consumer-founded idea. I think maybe it's been fed to us a little bit. You know, if you're growing carrots at home, they often come out with arms that are, you know,
They sure
intertwined.
do.
They've got some extra tentacles, you know. And the ones that you pull right out of the ground that still have the dirt on them, those tend to be the most delicious ones. So I think a mindset shift in the consumer of, you know, ugly produce is still produce. It's still gonna have the same nutritional value. It's still gonna, you know, you're gonna be able to cut into those carrots just the same way you would be able to perfectly straight and pointy one. Definitely needing a mindset shift there. It's so funny that you mentioned sweet potatoes. Potatoes are one of the things that we handle the most in our Winnipeg operation, especially. Last year we rescued over 120,000 pounds of potatoes alone. We've got some really amazing potato producers in Manitoba, and they come to us by the tote, like a 2,000-pound sack full of potatoes, and it takes a lot of labor to box them and then redistribute them. But they're perfect. You know, maybe they have a couple extra eyes, maybe they're a little bit bumped on one side, but nature is so resilient. you know, a lot of these vegetables can make it through a little bit of trauma before they get to us, the consumer. So yeah, that mindset shift of ugly on the outside doesn't mean it's not nutritious on the inside. So, and that adage about the one apple not spoiling the whole bag, it's so true. You just pick that one out and you cut that side off and the rest of the apple is still perfect. Or maybe you turn it into apple pie. You know, you're not noticing those bruises by the time you've turned it into something delicious. Yeah, we need to be less critical for sure of our food. And another thing I think is important to note is why are our apples being sold to us in plastic? You know, the fact that we're taking it off the shelf wrapped in plastic means that you're not able to sort what's in there, means that they're not able to sell that bag anymore. You know, so that bag often will go into the donation pile. But if we eliminated that need for plastic, you know, what would that change? Would that have an impact? So these are all kind of things that we deal with in kind of the recovery process. Is we're often opening packages, you know, the bell peppers that are many to the bag. We're opening them up, taking out the bad ones and getting the good ones out the door to our agency partners. Another thing I've interacted with is we've gotten pallets of cucumbers that were, you know, an inch, 2 inches too short, not up to the retailer's standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that kind of refusal, well, that food needs to go somewhere. You know, and without interventions like ours, that's destined for the landfill. And that is just not okay. You know, especially considering the person who harvested it, the distance that it traveled, the packaging that goes, you know, all of those natural resources. That really is the power of what we do is the last ditch effort to keep these things from ending up in the landfill.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, a bit of a mindset switch. You know, we're talking about simple steps that folks can take. But I think, I know for me personally, like, you know, when I go into a store, like maybe in my younger years, it's like, oh, like I want to go in, I want to get the best deal I can. You know, I want to get, it's like, oh, I'm here. Like, there's a big pile of apples. Like, of course I'm going to take all the best ones, you know, because I want the best ones and I'm paying my hard-earned dollars for that. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not discounting the fact that, you know, dollars and cents can be hard to come by for folks. So, and I'm not saying anything about not getting the best deal. And if you need to get the best deal, because that's how you can feed your family, I totally hear you, you know, totally empathize with that. Absolutely. But, you know, kind of the mindset I go in with now is more like, you know, it's kind of like a team effort. Like, you know, thank you, grocery store. I mean, we usually shop at farmers markets in my household, but we do get some stuff from the grocery store that we can't get elsewhere. And it's kind of going in as more of like a team effort. Like, oh, thank you, grocery store or farmers market for having these things available. And like, you know what? Maybe I will pick the, you know, produce item that doesn't look quite as beautiful, or like, oh, there's that, you know, egg carton that maybe, you know, one of the eggs, you know, leaked a little bit or something. It's like, well, like it's okay. Like it's a team effort. It's not just, I'm trying to get the best bang for my buck out of you. It's not just a one way street where you owe me something. It's more like, well, like, let's just try to not have this food go to waste. And, you know, sure, I'll like, you know, sacrifice a little bit, you know, other people can too. And so maybe just having a little bit of a mindset difference where we're on the same team here. And we're, yeah, just trying to feed folks and trying to minimize food waste. Totally. I know we're kind of starting to run a little bit low on time here, Julie, and I just have a couple more things I wanted to ask you about. So we've talked about some of the simple steps that folks can take around trying to reduce food waste, like, you know, making that shopping list at home and putting stuff in the freezer that's about to, you know, kick the bucket, and really thinking about those best before dates long and hard before succumbing to them. I'm just wondering if there are any, on our website, I like to give folks kind of the options, like simple steps like those, and then also steps that are a bit more involved. And I'm just wondering if there are any more involved steps that a person could take to help reduce food waste that spring to mind.
Well, I definitely say find a food rescue organization in your region. If you can, volunteer, advocate. We're you know, the legislation surrounding food donation is something that, you know, we're slowly working towards, that putting in a mandate for all food retailers to be required to donate their unsellable but still edible food. And hopefully we'll see that in the next couple of years. We've got some folks who are giving that some attention. But getting involved in an organization that is working with food rescue is a really powerful thing you can do. Volunteering your time to do some of that labor, it can be a really low commitment, especially in the case of leftovers. It is a low commitment. You kind of sign up for what you're available for and ignore us when you don't have time. Local food banks are also doing a lot of really good work in regards to food redistribution and helping people, you know, get what they need. So either, you know, participating in that way, or if folks have the, you know, if you have the funds to donate as well, the effort really is happening in your communities. You just kind of got to find it. And then the push for organics diversion as well. If you're, you know, if your municipality doesn't have, curbside compost yet, you know, it's 2024. It's time. push for that movement.
As far as other food rescues, and we'll talk in a minute about how folks can get in touch with the Leftovers Foundation in just a minute. But just for other food rescues, like, you know, if I'm in, if I'm on Prince Edward Island, or I'm in Tempe, Arizona, or I'm in, I don't know, Copenhagen in Denmark, like, how do I, what are some, oh, is there by any chance a central database of all the food rescues? And barring that, if not, what are some kind of keywords? Like, would you just kind of do a internet search for food rescue? Is that kind of the best search term to use? Or how would people find their local food rescues?
Yeah, that's right. I would definitely get to the internet and look up food rescue in your community. There's so many, like too many to name. There's one really great household name, which has a lot of educational material as well. If you can find them on YouTube, they're called Food Rescue Hero. There are Friends in the South. Vancouver Food Runners is another one that we're chummy with, local to Canada. But like I said, you know, a lot of food banks have efforts this way. It shouldn't be hard to find in your community, because it is happening. It's happening all across the country, all across the globe. You know, countries like France, you know, they've got that legislation mandating donation of unsellable food. So the global desire for this is, you know, is present. Just about finding where it is in your local community.
That's great. Yeah, I feel like, you know, there's so many polarizing issues in this world, but I don't think you'd find anyone on the street who's like, no, I think we need more food waste, you know, or like,
yeah, totally.
It's a unifying issue. I want to
pay more for my groceries.
Exactly. I know. Yeah. I want more stuff in the landfill. Like, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's a unifying issue. So that's totally good. Julia, just as we're kind of winding down on time here, I mean, if there's anything that, because we've kind of talked about what the Leftovers Foundation does, and, you know, here in bits and pieces throughout the course of our chat here, if there's anything else like you'd like to say about the Leftovers Foundation, this would be a great time. I do want to ask you, like, just to tell us the website and where we can find the Leftovers Foundation on social media. If folks do want to, you know, volunteer or donate, like, I'd like to get all that info. So anything else you want to say about your group and how we can contact you, that would be great, please. And I'll put all the links and stuff in the show notes of the episode.
So you can find us at rescuefood.ca for our website. On social media, we're the Leftovers Foundation. We're on Instagram, X, and Facebook. You can download our app. It's also called Rescue Food. That's free to download in the Google Play and App Stores. Once you decide to join us, if we're in your region, downloading the app, making a profile, you'll get a volunteer onboarding email. Read through that and As soon as you have, you're set to volunteer with us. We make it as easy as possible. There really isn't a commitment. Like I said, you sign up when you want to and ignore us when you can't. The commitment usually is about an hour tops. All of the details are there for you. The logistics of where you're picking up and where you're dropping off have all been done for you. That's our city coordinator's job, is to know our agency partners really well so that we can match the food to them. So all that work is done in advance for you. You show up to the food donor, load the donation into your car, and drive it straight over to the service agency. They receive it and you're free to go with your day. So it really is an easy way to make a huge impact. I think one of the parts that makes us unique in the food rescue space is our reliance on volunteers to kind of do the movement of food. It really takes the time, labor, and cost away from our service agency partners, who are doing the most to be helping people, right? They're often seeing people in crisis or helping them with housing resources or you know, doing harm reduction supplies or, you know, everything that people need under the sun, these agencies are providing. So, you know, I always tell our agency partners, you know, you're doing the real work. We're just getting you food. but it is really impactful. You know, the fact that food arrives for them in a consistent way, without them having to exert a lot of staff time, or, you know, planning around it, really is a benefit. So it's a tangible difference you can make in your community, without a lot of commitment.
That's very well said and just lovely. It sounds like an awesome organization, Julia, and I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today and educate us on this. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you as well.
And thanks to everyone listening. This concludes another episode of the Optimistic Future podcast. We hope it was enjoyable and enlightening, and please stay tuned for the next one.